Well, thank you. My name again is Bill Evans, and I'm over at Mississippi State University at an outline station called the Truck Crops Branch. For those of you that don't know truck crops, those are vegetables and fruits sold off the back of a truck. And we still see a lot of that in Mississippi. I don't know if you see that in your neighborhoods, but we'll have farmers go off and they'll fill up their truck with turnips and collard greens, and they'll park on the side of the road and they'll put a tarp over them and they'll sell them all day long and they'll go home with. Anyway, that's how that works. I want to speak to you a little bit about changes in soil status after 3 years of summer cover crops. And as I go right off the bat here, I'll tell you that as I was preparing the presentation, I found a statistical issue. And so the results in the abstract are different than the results that I'm going to present here today. The paper is the same, the methods are the same, but the conclusions are a bit different. So I will see if I can modify that abstract in the electronic versions, but the print abstract is not going to be accurately reflective of what the data should really say. So with that, we had 3 years of summer cover crops in Mississippi as part of an organic vegetable production system. This was certified organic land, and we had 4 cover crop treatments over 3 summers. We would grow the cover crop in the summertime, and then we plant fall vegetables behind that. We did this in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with LSU Ag Center and with us at Mississippi State in Crystal Springs. Here we're just going to talk about the final results after 3 years of soil sampling at Crystal Springs. Our seasons are such that in the summertime it's very hot and dry where we are. So vegetables do really well with we plant them in February through April and harvest them into July. But that July period and August, it's very hot, it's very dry, and there's very few vegetables. Sweet potatoes and southern peas are the exceptions, maybe lima beans. But very few other vegetables do well at that 2-month period there. So a lot of vegetable fields sit fallow until it gets cool again in September, and we can resume production of vegetable crops. And then we can do that all the way through the winter, depending on the crop. So in our system, unlike up north, we thought, well, let's use that fallow period in the summertime to grow cover crops and build our soil as we're required and as we want to. So that's what we did. We tested 4 cover crop systems and 4 rates of composted broiler litter, because the cover crop doesn't provide all the nutrients we need, and it is an organic system, so we had to have supplemental nutrients to that. And this was in a split plot arrangement, with the cover crop being the main plot and the composted broiler litter being the subplot. The cover crops we had were sorghum Sudan, sesame, sun hemp, and a sesame-sun hemp blend. Sun hemp is crotalaria, and so crotalaria is very expensive seed. And so in all of this, we approached it at the beginning with a issue of trying to minimize the cost of this to the grower. And so we tried this blend to see if we could get the benefits of the nitrogen of the sun hemp as well as having the biomass of the sesame. Sesame and sun hemp produce a lot of biomass, although sun hemp in our studies produced more. These were planted in a prepared flat ground in this last year in July of 2013, grown for just under 60 days, flail mowed and then tilled in, and then the crop land was rested another 30 days before they got planted in. So this is how the cover crops look in the plots, various plots, a little bit of variability there, but good stands, and not once you get past the edge, there was not a lot of weed pressure within the plots. This is how it looks after you till it in, and this, I guess I really don't have a actual pointer, but that's okay. You can see some darker areas and some lighter areas in the study, in that plot, that indicate the different cover crop plots and how they behaved. The sun hemp in particular, as well as the sorghum Sudan, produced a lot of biomass that was left on top after tilling that wasn't completely broken down by the flail mower. All the cover crops grew well. The sorghum Sudan and the crotalaria produced the most above ground biomass. And I don't have that data here today, but it did. And for us, the sesame alone produced the least, but it's not as woody as the other materials that we had in the study. And so that was kind of logical. The composted broiler litter that we used was made from sawdust bedding, hardened softwood, combined with chicken waste materials and droppings. It was composted to heat and turned and aerated and rested greater than 60 days before it was applied as delivered. So we applied it with a slight amount of moisture in it. We didn't dry it or moisten it at all before or grind it anymore. It was Curry Farms in Raleigh, Mississippi. And it was approximately a 222 when it was delivered. The lettuce production, which was our fall crop in 2013, was planted into the plots, perpendicular to all of the plots, and the CBL was added before that as at a rate of up to 5 tons to the acre, and this is on a fresh weight basis. And then this Nevada, which is a semi-heading Batavian style or French crisp lettuce, was transplanted 30 to 35 days after the cover crops were fail mode. They were twin rows, 12 inches apart in the row and 42 inches between the beds. They were irrigated to set the transplants. I should say also that the cover crop, we irrigated before we planted it, but we did not irrigate to grow the cover crop. That was another thing. We didn't want a lot of extra inputs for the cover crop. We wanted the cover crop to be minimal addition to the system. And there was no additional fertilizer during the life of the lettuce crop. And we had a heavy rain about midway through this 2013 crop that impacted the last rep 4 a little bit, creating a little rep difference there. And we also had an early December record cold snap last year that resulted in us having to go out and buy some heavy frost protection for the lettuce. And the lettuce indeed survived that frost because of that. But we harvested the middle row and graded it. This is how it looked when we transplanted it. And if you recall, the plots of cover crops ran perpendicular to these rows of lettuce. This is what the sorghum Sudan grass looked at the time we flailed it. And this is what happens when you put lettuce in without putting the composted broiler litter on the lettuce. You get spots. That's allelopathy. I presented that data in another meeting. That's allelopathy due to the sorghum Sudan. The other cover crops in the system did not produce this effect, and the CBL, the composted broiler litter, ameliorated these effects or mitigated these effects a bit, although not completely. When you look at the yield data of the lettuce, and you can see that the footprints in the foreground of that rainy period that we had. So now let's look at the soil data that we have. And the reality is the abstract reports a couple of different changes in the soil characteristics. But you'll see as we go through, there are not. The compost broiler litter produced significant changes in soil qualities. There were no interactions between the compost broiler litter and the cover crop, but all 4 of the cover crops resulted in very similar after 3 years of this same thing. And the cover crops were planted in the same plot every summer. So if it had sorghum in year 1, it had sorghum in year 3 and all of that. But there's no significant difference there. You see there's only 1.5 pH units difference there on that graph. It looks bigger than it is. There's no difference there. There was no difference in organic matter, although you can see the sesame, the number is lower, but it's not lower statistically, so it's not lower. And we were not, after 3 years of cover crop, we were not able to achieve cover crop and CBL, of course, we were not able to achieve with cover crop main effect any huge significant increases in soil organic matter. Soil phosphorus, the CBL, of course, you'd expect because it's high in phosphorus, had a significant effect on soil P, but the cover crop did not. This is all done by the Lancaster, by the way, the Lancaster soil test, a method that Mississippi State uses. I think we're the only lab in the country using that method now. It's a weak acid method like the others. Again, no significant differences. Same idea here. None of those, it looks like there's a huge difference there, but that's just because of the way the graph came out. It's 1900 versus 2000. There's really no significant difference there. Same with magnesium. Same with zinc. There's no difference there between 3.9 and 4.06. Nothing to talk about there. We measure sulfur in Mississippi because we have some sulfur issues in parts of the state. I don't have any at my place, really. But again, no significant difference there. And we have some sodic soils in the state, too. So we measure sodium sometimes. And while it looks like sorghum might have produced, that's not a significant difference there. It was absolute. There's an absolute difference, but not a significant difference there. So we also had a significant effect of the Crotalaria on the nitrogen levels and the relative response to compost broiler litter. But we don't have, because of the way our study was funded and what we did, we don't have soil nitrogen levels. So I don't have those today. I would love to have that, and I want to do that. We do have nutrient levels for the cover crops, and that data is going to be presented this winter at the Southern Region meetings. But the sorghum cover crop produced an allelopathic effect of the lettuce. That's really the biggest finding from the cover crops in this study. The CBL had a significant influence on soil test values, but there was no cover crop by compost broiler litter interaction in what we did. And after three seasons, there was no significant effect of cover crop on the soil test of different cover crops. They didn't affect it differently. We need to see a little bit more on how the summer cover crops affect soil nitrogen. In fact, we need to do a lot more of that because that's going to be really important in the future. Thank my groups at LSU and us and some donations of seed and some litter. And then I can entertain a few questions if there are any. Yes, sir.
Do you have data on the concentrations of Torbolio from the sorghum Sudan grass? Are you even possible that there might have been some nitrogen mobilization occurring from the Sudan grass that was fairly near when you incorporated?
That's a great question. The question is, did we measure any of the chemistry from the sorghum? And then do you think there was some nitrogen immobilization? It's possible there was some nitrogen immobilization, but we didn't see the same effect we saw with the lettuce that we saw. We didn't see it in the sesame plots. So that also did not produce any extra nitrogen, although it's less woody, to be fair. It's less woody. So what we think the main effect is indeed that allelopathic effect, and we were not able at this time to test the chemistry for the sorghum. Great question. More? One way in the back.
What is the initial pH of your soil?
What is the initial pH of our soil? We had it just below 6 when we started the study 3 years ago. And we're up in the low 6s now, and that's pretty good for where we are.
Why do you think that all these different overcrops, climate change is really from their soil? Because some of them are 6.8. I think you are initial pH of 6. Why do you think that matters differently?
It's a great question. Why do I think the cover crops might have influenced the soil pH over time? The reality is when we did, and I have that data, when we look at the pH of the soils 3 years ago and the pH of the soils today, the noise in the data resulted in insignificant differences in change. The change was not significant among the cover crops. So, I mean, the difference in change among the cover crops was not significant. The absolute difference from 2011 to 2013, there may be some significant difference there. Some of that also, when we do our pH testing, some of that can be dependent on our soils because they're low in organic matter and calcium and things. We have we have seasonal differences and the weather and the moisture leading up in the few months preceding it can really have an influence on, you know, a half unit here, a half unit, you know, a quarter unit there. So that may be all we're seeing, but that's a great question for me to follow up on with our group. Thank you.